mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, this week we'll get the latest read on consumer spending and savings levels. And while we often lament the fact that too many Americans are financially unstable, a new survey finds that's probably because a significant number rate their financial knowledge as either low or non-existent. Also this morning, to your health, cancer rates are growing among the under 50 population, and doctors aren't sure why. With this being Myeloma Awareness Month, a reminder that the disease can affect anyone and anytime. And the Findlay Rotary Club has honored a generation of educators in the community through their Golden Apple Awards, and you can still nominate a deserving teacher for this prestigious recognition this year. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I looked it up, and the opening day odds for the 2024 World Series, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, they believe the LA Dodgers are the favorites to take the crown this year. Dodgers are plus 320 is the money line. That means if you bet $100, the payoff would be 320. So bet 100 to win 320. The Braves are next at plus 450. The Astros are plus 700. The Yankees are plus 900. And in fifth place, tied for fifth place, the defending champion, Texas Rangers, at plus 1,400 to win it again, to repeat. And guess who they are tied for, fifth most likely to win the World Series? The Baltimore Orioles at plus 1,400. I didn't even know the Baltimore Orioles still had a team. They've been so bad for so long. The Orioles tied with the Rangers for fifth most likely, fifth best odds to win the World Series. In case you're curious, the Reds are plus 5,500. The Guardians open at plus 6,000 to win the World Series this year. And the Tigers are plus 7,000 to win it all. So those are the opening odds. The least likely teams to win the World Series, they are at plus 50,000 to win, Oakland and Colorado. So there you go. Opening day of the Major League Baseball season. We all look forward to that. I have been struggling with this all week, and yet again, I have a bit of a iffy voice this morning. Hopefully we can make it through, and we'll make it to the end of the week. But it started a couple of days ago. It was a little gravelly. And then yesterday was very phlegmy. When I woke up yesterday, I could not talk at all. And I got a little warm, got warmed up my voice and, you know, clear some of that phlegm, we were okay. Today, I just have a really deep voice. It's much deeper, or it seems as much deeper than it normally is. So we've got that traditional, I've got like a Barry White voice today. Got a Barry White voice. So anyway, again, we'll hopefully make it through the day today. Wait, I just the thought crossed my mind. It suddenly dawned on me yesterday that Easter is this weekend, and I don't want to be stuck in bed while everybody else is celebrating Easter dinner and visiting with family and everything. I don't get a chance to see family very often, and so I hope I can get over whatever this is in time for Easter. But hey, speaking of Easter, Louis the Raccoon is this year's Cadbury Bunny. Louis the Raccoon. He is the first of his species to win the title. Two-year-old Louis came under his owner's care when he was deemed unfit to live in the wild. He was a rescue raccoon and couldn't be released. So Louis has developed... Louis has lived with his owner and has developed a love of painting, apparently, is what Louis likes to do best. And believe it or not, Louis's owner sells his artwork to benefit wildlife and rehab centers, which is kind of cool. The folks at Cadbury say each year we look forward to crowning a new Cadbury Bunny, especially this year where we engage fans in a new way through our bracket-style competition. Previous winners include Crash the Rescue Cat and Annie Rose the Therapy Dog. This year, it's Louie the Raccoon is the official Cadbury Bunny. So that is the big story for Easter coming up. You know what else is happening? Sunday is Easter. You know what Monday is? April Fool's Day. And I don't know if this is real or not, but 7-Eleven issued a press release saying that they have added a new beverage flavor to their lineup. A new beverage flavor available at 7-Eleven, and I would imagine by extension Speedway locations, because 7-Eleven and Speedway are now one. They call it the Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water. The drink, according to the company, is inspired by the chain's signature snack, the Big Bite Hot Dog, and promises to encapsulate the essence of the 7-Eleven hot dog in a sparkling water. Now, here's what makes me suspicious and makes me hopeful that this is not real. Apparently, according to the press release, the new drink is set to debut on Monday. And Monday, of course, is April 1st. So, I'm thinking this is an April Fool's joke, but if not, at the very least, they have a little time to reconsider, and I hope they do. That's, man, if that's not an April Fool's joke, it should be. Big Bite Hot Dog Sparkling Water. No, thank you. This I know is real, and this may be the most American thing ever. This may be the most American capitalistic thing ever. Weed shops in the Big Apple, marijuana dispensaries in Big Apple, are stocking Mike Tyson branded edibles. Mike Tyson branded edibles in the weed shops. They are shaped like an ear, which of course is a flashback to Mike Tyson's 1997 fight with Evander Holyfield, when he was famously disqualified for biting Holyfield's ear. The edibles are fittingly named Mike Bites. In a statement, Mike Tyson said, quote, "Growing up in Brooklyn, I could have never imagined a time when cannabis would be legally utilized to enhance both mental and physical well-being," unquote. But that has got to be the most American capitalistic thing ever, right? Marijuana edibles in the shape of an ear celebrating Mike Tyson's most infamous fight. That is American ingenuity right there. That's America. Speaking of America, after we get through Easter, and we get through opening day today, we get through March Madness, the NASCAR All-Star Race is coming up in May, so just a little over a month away, and it will be held once again this year at the historic North Wilkesboro Speedway. Now, NASCAR is widely known to have its origins in transporting moonshine. The early racers were moonshiners who tried to outrun the cops, and they would get together and compare notes on who had the fastest vehicle to outrun the cops. So then it transformed into races in the South among the moonshiners for bragging rights and who had the fastest cars. So that's where it all dates back. And now, apparently, underneath the North Wilkesboro Speedway, they have discovered a possible moonshine cave. It's been discovered in a sinkhole under the stands. It was found last week when workers began removing seats to investigate the cause of concrete cracks in the front stretch area near the grandstand. The senior vice president, Steve Swift, says the 700-square-foot area includes a small cave and an interior wall that could have been used to hide or even make the liquor back in the day, back in the moonshining day. They found a moonshine cave underneath the North Wilkesboro Speedway. They are evaluating, Speedway officials are evaluating what to do next as about 600 seats have been taken out to repair the area. And Mr. Swift says they've got to finish soon because the All-Star Race Weekend or All-Star Race Week begins May 14th. So they don't have a whole lot of time to address it. But they can't remove the moonshining cave under the speedway. I mean, NASCAR fans would have a cow if they removed it and filled it in. I mean, you got to make it like a museum or something. And for it to be at the historic North Wilkesboro Speedway, where they haven't raced in a number of years, went back last year, and everybody is so sentimental about it and its place in the sport's early days. I mean, how perfect is that? America, right there. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected today, a high around 50, mostly clear tonight, a low around 30. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is urging the motoring public to exercise the three Ps when it comes to the total solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th. Sergeant Ryan Purpura says the three Ps are plan, prepare, and patience. And he makes clear you're not allowed to stop along the interstate to watch the eclipse.
Don't plan on setting up camp or stopping along the interstate, an entrance or exit ramp, or any other roadway. This is never permitted.
He says people need to plan ahead on where they'll be viewing the eclipse and give themselves plenty of time to get there and get home. Get more eclipse advice from the Highway Patrol in the story on our website. Former State Representative Bridget Kelly has died. She passed away at the age of 40 after a battle with cancer. In honor of her life and service to the state, the governor has ordered flags of the United States and the state of Ohio to be flown at half-staff upon all public buildings and grounds throughout Hamilton County, the Ohio State House, the Vern Rice Center, and Rhodes Tower from sunrise to sunset on the day of her funeral. Get more in the story on our website. The Hope House benefit auction, Hope Shines Bright, is coming up in a few weeks. Development Director Lori Poland was on with WFIN's Chris Oaks to discuss the event and how their organization helps homeless and impoverished individuals and families in Hancock County.
Over 80% of the people that we serve that successfully complete our programs are still housed a year later. We're giving them more tools in their toolbox so that they can stay on their own 2 feet.
The benefit auction will be held on April 12th at the Hancock Hotel. Get more details in the story on our website. The United Way of Hancock County C-Corps Scholarship Committee has named Liberty Benton High School senior Emily Tomlinson as this year's United Way Foundation C-Corps Scholar. Emily was selected from a large field of applicants based on her volunteerism, academic accomplishments, involvement in extracurriculars and school activities, and leadership skills. Emily plans on attending the University of Cincinnati to major in pre-occupational therapy. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So this week we're going to get the latest Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the monthly read on buying habits and savings levels of American consumers. And we often lament the fact that people are spending too much and not saving enough. And we talk critically about those who aren't financially stable or secure. Survey after survey, year after year, shows millions struggling to keep their head above water. Well, that could be because 17 million Americans say they have no financial knowledge. According to a recent survey conducted by the financial services platform Raisin, 3 in 10 of the 4,000 respondents rated their financial knowledge as either low or non-existent. Ben McLaughlin is personal finance expert at Raisin US. Ben, kind of hard to make good, sound financial decisions when you don't know what you're doing. And that's basically what a significant segment of the population is saying in this survey here.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, we conduct this survey just to get a general pulse of American consumer sentiment about savings and personal finance. And to us, it was shocking. I mean, 60% of American consumers are very worried about their personal financial situation, and 50% are actually desperate and they feel hopeless. So we wanted to try to get to the bottom of why. And, you know, we all know that finances can be intimidating. It's like doing taxes. No one really wants to force themselves to budget. And they think, you know, you have to have an enormous spreadsheet and you need to have an accounting degree to be able to do that. But in fact, you really don't. And you don't need a financial education. In fact, I mean, I don't think, at least when I was going to school, they never taught personal finance in school. You learn from your family and friends, and that's how you learn, just through experience. And there is no formal education or training. I think maybe that's changing today, which is great. But of course, we're all in the same boat, and you know, we really have to help each other out and learn. And really, it's not that complicated once you get the basics. And with the basics, you can really build up your financial health pretty quickly.
So talk a little bit about what key factors you find that contribute to this, I guess, well, this lack of knowledge that you find in the survey. What are the key factors that lead people to feel so not confident with their financial knowledge and skills?
I mean, people just feel overwhelmed, I think. You know, it's a lot of people are, you know, we have a lot on our plate and people have other priorities. And, you know, a lot of people spend without thinking. And of course, there's a lot of spend on necessities, but there's a lot of consumption that, you know, might not be necessary. So, you know, one thing we always like to ask people to do to really get a sense of your personal financial situation, you should really take a month to actually see what you spend. And you might think you do, but you'll be surprised when you actually do this exercise. And I would recommend you do it, you know, every year or so, to actually whittle down the specifics of what you spend. And you'd be surprised that some of the expenses that, you know, probably aren't necessary or essential to your happiness or a fulfilling life. And if you can eliminate those expenses and use them towards more pressing issues, such as maybe you have high credit card debt that you want to get down, or maybe you don't even have an emergency fund and you should build that up. You'll be able to do this, but the first thing you need to do is understand your financial health and really see what are the key levers that are driving you to feel this way and overspend in certain areas. And once you have that, it's much easier to build a plan and really come up with a strategy to fix your personal situation.
Couple of other interesting points brought up in the survey. I thought this was really fascinating. And I'm curious your thoughts on the reason behind this, the fact that millennials appear to be the most financially stressed demographic when you break it down by age, but they are also the best savers.
No, absolutely. And when I first saw that, I was kind of surprised myself, but you'd think, you know, maybe baby boomers, someone, you know, really close to retirement or in retirement would be the most financially stressed. But the fact is, millennials are, because we refer to them as the sandwich generation. A lot of them have younger children and elder parents. And as all of us with children know, they can be extremely expensive. And, you know, sometimes people don't plan either, you know, because they don't have the opportunity to save for retirement. So they're forced to turn to their kids for extra support. So if you're in that situation where you're supporting both your parents and children, I mean, rightfully so, you're going to be extremely stressed about your finances and managing it all. So it was a very interesting finding that we saw. And then conversely, and you wouldn't think it's intuitive, but they're also the best savers.
Yeah.
When you think about it, this generation grew up as digital natives. So they've been exposed to technology that didn't exist in prior generations. And it's made it a lot easier for people to save, to do it, you know, not only cheaply or free, but also have access to all these great saving products and opportunities that you really couldn't do before unless you are a wealthy individual or someone that had expert financial help, a financial advisor, the like. So a lot of these millennials have come in and they've, you know, been more responsible about, you know, doing things like contributing to a 401k when they get into the job market, or setting up recurring deposits or auto recurring deposits for their savings when they have a bank account, and really using the tools available to help them save. And on top of that, with all the social media trends that we've witnessed in recent years about, you know, it's a great thing, actually. They've gone viral about, you know, saving tips and creative ways to save. It really forced this generation to think about savings in a different light and really plan for their financial future.
One of the other things that you find, and this is much less surprising, is that women are more stressed about finances than men. And that is certainly not surprising, falls in line with what we know historically, that women are at, generally speaking, at somewhat of a disadvantage financially as compared to men in most cases.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, one thing when we were doing the survey, I didn't realize that, you know, there are 10 million households in the United States that are single family households. And out of that, 80%, 8 million women are the head of those households. So that creates an undue burden on them financially. When you think about, you know, women that have children, they're taken out of the workforce. They're forced to care for the children. It's so expensive to get childcare. So sometimes they have to stay out of the workforce for much longer. And that has an impact on their future earning potential future, opportunities for promotion and the like. So overall, compared to men, their earnings are about 84% on the dollar, which makes a huge impact. So when you consider all the factors, it really isn't surprising. It's something that hopefully we can address in the future.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, a great place to start is by sitting down and taking a month and tracking all of that spending and identifying where there are areas for improvement. So once we've done that and we have all of those figures in front of us, what would be the first thing to do with respect to, improving our financial well-being? Where do we go from there?
Sure. I mean, well, first thing, once you have all the facts, you have a general sense of your financial situation, it's much easier to eliminate those unnecessary expenses. And, we all are guilty of, frivolous expenditures from time to time.
Sure.
So, figuring out what's critical for me and my happiness and what can I remove easily. And I think, people in general can do that quite easily. So that's number one. Once you've identified those expenses that you can remove, then use that income, that additional income, to do whatever is most critical to your financial health. So, for example, if you have high credit card debt, get rid of that first. That's typically very high interest income, and it's very hard to get out of, and it keeps on expanding. So the closer you can get rid of that, the better for you. If you're one of the lucky people that doesn't have any debt, well, then make sure you have the basics. Make sure you have that six-month savings for any emergency that might come up, and make sure that you put it in a high-yield savings account where you're earning interest that's compounding, so you're actually making your money work for you. And then once you have the basics set out, then you can start coming up with a strategy of, well, how do I save for the future? What can I afford to put away on a, monthly or biweekly basis for my paycheck? And don't even think about it. Take that percentage out and put it in your savings account, your investment account, whatever you feel comfortable with for the short and long term, and plan your financial strategy around that. And as you grow in income, hopefully in the future, continue to add more and more. And you'll see in a very short period of time, with compounding and interest, that might seem insignificant in the beginning, but over the years, that has a huge impact. And I think people really will feel good about that when they see that in their statement.
Lastly, one final question is kind of related to, you talk about, making that priority list of the things that are urgent for your particular situation. We're coming up on tax deadline day. A lot of folks will be getting a big chunk of money back from their taxes. Is that something you use to just slot into all of those priorities, or should that be something that you do something else with? Is that a different animal altogether?
Sure. And I think, and everyone, a lot of people, including myself, have been guilty of this in the past, where we see a tax refund come through and it's free money. It's like winning the lottery, and we tend to splurge and spend it all on other things. Now, it's important to remember that refund is the same as, what you did before. It's hard-earned income, and you should treat it as such. So use that money. If you want to splurge a little bit, great, treat yourself, but use the majority to get out of debt, to put that emergency fund in, and to save for the future, because you know what? In a few years, you're really going to be thankful that you did that.
Ben McLaughlin, again, is personal finance expert at Raisin US. We mentioned the survey that really is an eye-opener in terms of how few Americans feel confident in their financial knowledge and their financial skills. Where do we get more information, Ben?
Sure. If you go to Raisin.com, we have a plethora of research and content that you can access. We try to make savings easy for people. So we have savings guides. We have different articles that go over the common types of savings tips that most people are struggling to understand. There's a lot of jargon in the industry, so we explain what that jargon means, and we really try to make it easier for people to manage their finance, understand how to do it in an efficient manner.
Ben, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Talk about something very serious in the health and medical file this morning. And interesting and troublesome new trend that doctors have noticed of late. Cancer rates have been increasing in adults under the age of 50, and researchers are not exactly sure why that is. I have the story in the news this morning. Former state representative Bridget Kelly from Hamilton County, who passed away, cancer, I believe the age of 40, right? She's 40. And then a few days ago, Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, confirmed the rumors that she has been undergoing treatment for cancer. She is 42. Professor Andrew Beggs of the University of Birmingham in the UK says there might be some sort of unknown environmental factor that researchers have yet to discover. But he says he runs a clinic for early onset cancer in adults, and they have been seeing more and more people in their 40s diagnosed with cancer. The incidence of younger adults having cancer is 22% higher than it was in the 1990s. And there is also a gender divide. Women in their early 40s are twice as likely to develop cancer as compared to men of the same age. So to your health this morning, as it happens, we are nearing the end of Myeloma Awareness Month in March. And so want to use that as a springboard to talk about this larger issue. This is, myeloma is a form of blood cancer that can affect anyone at any time. Generally speaking, men are at higher risk than women. African Americans at higher risk than Caucasians. Individuals over 50 at higher risk than those under 50 statistically. But all of those quote unquote rules have a significant number of exceptions. And again, we're just using this as an example to talk about this larger concern, but Lily is with us. She is a myeloma survivor and volunteer with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And Lily, tell us how you learned you had myeloma and how you felt, how it felt to receive that news.
Yeah. So I was diagnosed when I was 35. My symptoms initially were more stomach related. I was chronically nauseous after every meal. I had migraines. I had constant fatigue. But what really had me scared was the weakness in my legs. They often felt like noodles or just fatigued. The scariest part was when I slid down the stairs of my own home, which led me to go to my primary doctor. I had apparently gone into acute renal failure and spent a week in the hospital.
Wow.
After running several tests, I was told that I had to meet with an oncologist because unfortunately they found cancer cells in my body. It was all so surreal, to be quite honest. It was just surreal. The treatment, the kidney failure, then that led to dialysis. It all hit me like a ton of bricks. But I'll tell you, today, as of 2 months ago, I am off my maintenance chemo. I am a business owner and absolutely love doing just this, dedicating my free time to bring awareness to this disease for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. That is terrific news. It's interesting to hear you talk about that, that a number of the symptoms that you know look back on now and say, well, maybe these were clues, were so almost random. I mean, there's not things that you would necessarily put together, on your own. So I guess that just underscores the importance of, you know, recognizing and reaching out when anything just feels off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with multiple myeloma, early detection is best, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, like I mentioned, I mean, these symptoms could be anything. I initially thought that I had a stomach bug or like I was gluten intolerant or something, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that wasn't it. You know, it was consistently the same thing. And then after that scare of kind of sliding down the last five steps, like my legs gave out from under me, I mean, I had to see a doctor at that point. But, you know, we really need to do better at as soon as we feel something, you know, and it's persistent, then we need to go directly to the doctor because as a doctor, it's the doctor's responsibility to listen to our symptoms and make the right diagnosis.
Now, you mentioned that you have gone through, concluded your treatment. What was that experience like? Because this is one of the things that I think is really scary to people.
Yeah, most definitely. It was initially all daunting. I could remember, the first day that I went on the tour to do, you know, the chemotherapy tour, right? And as I'm touring around, I'm literally shaking hands with nurses and crying at the same time. Like, initially, it's very daunting, but thankfully, you have tons of support, you know, at those clinics. And then you also have support like the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, where, you know, they literally have support that will follow you throughout treatment, just checking in to make sure you're okay. Because what's something that's common when having a cancer like this is that you feel alone. You don't have, you feel like you don't have anyone else to connect to, even though your family's there, right?
Yeah.
You feel alone, like no one's there. So it's really good to have, you know, even resources and groups like this to be a part of your support system.
Yeah, I was going to ask, talk a little bit about the significance, the importance of those support services from LLS and how they can benefit somebody who is going through the experience that you went through.
Definitely. So for me, you know, LLS has tons of information, resources, educational resources, personal support, like I said, from members that will call and check on you throughout your treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have access to community chat groups and connecting with other patients, you know, so you have a chance to connect with other patients that have gone through the same symptoms or emotional roller coasters even. LLS also provides, you know, financial assistance with co-pays because medication is extremely expensive. I mean, all of this, and it's completely free.
At the end of the day, when you look back, what is the maybe the most significant thing that you learned from your experience that you want to share with others, something that you wish you had known going in?
Yeah, I mean, okay. So I would say one thing that I believe I learned throughout this entire experience that I take even today and apply it to everything else around my life is I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was. And I think that a lot of the warriors, survivors, current patients that are going through multiple myeloma, they can attest to this. You know, initially when you're diagnosed, like I said, it's very daunting.
Sure.
You do feel alone, but you push through, right? You know, you have two choices. You either live or you die, right? So I chose to live. I chose to be around my family. I wanted to see my son graduate. You know, the thought of that, you know, was I couldn't have it. You know, it was, I resisted. So that being said, that's what I would tell other patients and, you know, folks that have recently been diagnosed. You know, you are a lot stronger than you think you are. You just have to put it in your mind that you want to live.
You got this. Lily is a myeloma survivor, volunteer with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. As we mentioned, March Myeloma Awareness Month. And where do we get more information from the LLS?
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to have all the listeners call 1-800-955-4572, or they can go directly to lls.org.
We will put that link up at our webpage as well. To your health this morning. Lily, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin in Ontario, Canada this morning. A story from up north where a truck driver minding his own business, cruising along Highway 3, when suddenly a turkey slams into and through the windshield of the big rig. A turkey slammed into the windshield of the truck. The wild turkey ended up inside the cab with the driver. After crashing through the glass, photos show a very confused turkey sitting next to, I would imagine, an equally confused driver amidst the remnants of the broken windshield. What I thought, what made me laugh about this story is, I mean, thank goodness everyone is okay. Even the turkey apparently is okay, which is pretty bizarre. But the police, the Ontario police, posting about this incident on social media, had this to say, and I'm quoting, "It's important to always pay attention and have full control of your vehicle," unquote. Yeah, I would agree in most normal circumstances, but I think if you're suddenly staring at a very confused turkey that has crashed through your windshield, I think maybe you get a pass in terms of not paying attention to the road. I think that there would be, that would be a distraction. And while most distractions are discouraged, I think you get a pass if you've got a turkey suddenly crashing through your windshield and into the cab of your truck. I'm just saying. But that's what I said. Make sure that you pay attention and have full control of your vehicle. Okay. Let's see. Back in this country, in Oregon, this in Washington County, Oregon, where police stumbled upon a massive bag containing 15 pounds of marijuana purely by happenstance, a fairly routine call led to the massive drug bust. The sheriff's office says they received a call about excessive littering in the city of Cornelius and found trash scattered around a ditch on the side of the road. That's what they found when they got there. As they were cleaning up the trash, they discovered a gigantic vacuum-sealed plastic bag that turned out to be filled with marijuana. 15 pounds of it, said to be worth nearly $20,000. I don't know if they know who it belongs to, if there was any identifying, if it was part of the other trash that had been thrown out someone's window, or if it was just a happy coincidence. I don't know if they have any way of tracking it down, but wow. Just stumble upon 15 pounds of weed. That is crazy. Remember the story that we had a few days ago, excuse me, in the broken news about the fight over an order of McDonald's French fries that turned into something much bigger, ended up with people in the hospital, and three people got arrested, somebody got tased, and the whole thing, it was all over an argument over McDonald's fries. Well, a Pittsburgh man has been hospitalized and another is in jail over a fight that started with a banana. Local news affiliate WTAE-TV reports the fight started when a man threw a banana at employees of a gas station convenience store, and they threw it back. Yeah, throw a banana at me. I threw it back, leading to multiple bananas being thrown. It was a banana war. Things just escalated from there with the man who threw the first banana punching one of the employees in the face. That led the employee to allegedly chase the man into the parking lot where he struck the man on the head with a piece of PVC pipe. That went to zero, from 0 to 60 in a hurry. The employee is actually the one that is in the Allegheny County Jail, charged with aggravated assault and reckless endangerment. The person who originally threw the banana and started the whole thing is actually the one in the hospital with a potential brain bleed. I don't know, but I would think, if I was the owner of the convenience store in question, I might rethink the idea of stocking fresh bananas. I think I might not stock any more bananas. Yes, we have no bananas anymore. This is why we can't have nice things, I guess. A couple of other items from the broken news. This also from the international file. This is another case of mistaken identity. A woman in Cheshire, England, rescued an abandoned baby hedgehog and took it to a local animal hospital. Well, she thought it was an abandoned baby hedgehog. But the Lower Mosswood Nature Reserve and Wildlife Hospital posted on Facebook, "Our hearts melted as a kind soul thought she was rescuing a baby hedgehog, only to discover it was a fluffy pom-pom from a bobble hat." So somebody's palm on the top of their winter hat had fallen out, and that's what she actually rescued. The adorable pom-pom, though, still got all of the love, complete with some cozy, tender, loving care. The Wildlife Hospital and Nature Preserve goes on to say, "Remember, kindness has no bounds, even when it's to a faux furry friend." Oh, my goodness. Actually, what's funny about this is the woman rescued the hedgehog and didn't take it to the animal hospital right away. She actually took it home. She only took it to the animal hospital the next day because she was concerned that it hadn't moved or pooped all night. And that's when she discovered that she had rescued the yarn palm from someone's winter hat. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the CDC has released a report yesterday that rates of sexually transmitted diseases are skyrocketing among older Americans. I shouldn't laugh. CDC says rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea in people age 55 and over more than doubled in the U.S. Over the course of the past decade. And in that same time span, rates of syphilis among seniors increased sevenfold. The CDC goes on to say factors driving up the rates of STDs among older Americans include longer lifespans and a lack of sex education among older adults. I saw that story, and the only thing that I could think of was, who wants to have that talk with Grandma and Grandpa? You know? Who wants to have that talk? Grandma, come sit down. We have to have a talk. There you go. Not the conversation you have on Easter Sunday. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Winning run at second, one down, the pitch. A swing and a liner to deep left. Back goes McCormick. It's over his head. Around third, coming home. Freeman scores. The winner, Brennan, delivers the third walk-off win.
The Guardians open the season Thursday night at Oakland. Pre-game at 9:35 on 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You've heard the old saying that you're only as old as you feel, right? Well, researchers at Stockholm University in Sweden have found that the amount of sleep you get directly correlates to how young or old you feel. They have a term for it. They call it subjective aging, the age we feel rather than the number of times we've been around the sun. Researchers discovered that for every day that a test subject slept poorly, for every day that someone slept poorly, they felt 1/4 of 1 year older than their actual age on average. 1/4 of 1 year. Those who reported feeling the least awake on a scale of 1 to 9, the most sleepy, felt as many as 10 years older than they actually were. And some of the individuals in their study, they allowed the test subjects to get varying amounts of sleep and then asked, you know, gauged how old they felt. After one group was restricted to 4 hours of sleep for just 2 nights in a row, those test subjects, regardless of their actual age, felt nearly 4.5 years older than the group that got 9 hours of sleep for 2 hours straight. So just 2 hours of toss, or just 2 nights of tossing and turning, can make you feel upwards of 5 years older than you actually are. Now, the researchers did point out, and I thought this was kind of interesting, the older that the test subjects were, the more pronounced the aging effect was. So the older you are to start with, and then you get less sleep, you have that perceived age increases that much more quickly, which I suppose is not a surprise if you really think about it. But in the end, the researchers say that the bottom line is this: a good night's sleep is central for feeling younger than one's actual age. So, again, it's probably not necessarily groundbreaking to hear that, but we actually have scientific proof that the amount of sleep that you get impacts how old you feel or how young you feel. So apparently my brain is in more of a fog this week than what I realized. All morning long, we've been mentioning that in this segment, we're going to talk about the Findlay Rotary Club's Golden Apple Awards. They're annual program to honor educators in the community that go above and beyond for their students. That actually, we somehow, I got my dates mixed up. That will be on Monday that the folks from Rotary are going to be here to talk about the Golden Apple Awards, because the deadline is coming up to nominate deserving teachers for this year's Golden Apple Awards. And so on Monday, we're going to talk about that. Why I had that down for today, I have no idea, but I will blame it on the brain fog this morning. But anyway, so it's an early preview of what we're going to be talking about on Monday. We can talk about this. Earlier in the week, we were joined in the studio by the folks at St. Mark's United Methodist Church, who, along with their Band of Brothers and Sisters group, holding the annual Good Friday Community Breakfast tomorrow morning. So you want to put this on your calendar, because it is going to be a terrific program, along with the breakfast, great food, and a great guest speaker. In case you missed it, on Monday morning on the program, Bruce Beck and Pastor Dan Metzger from St. Mark's dropped by the studio to give us all of the details. This is kind of an annual tradition for, I don't know, as long as anyone can remember.
Yeah.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the breakfast on Friday.
All right. It's this Friday. Mm-hmm. Doors open at 7:30. Breakfast starts at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $10, and you can get them at the door, or you can call the church office to make reservations, and that number is 419-422-4236.
And as we mentioned, this is a program, the Band of Brothers and Sisters group.
And that's a small group at St. Mark's. Yeah. It has been around for a number of years. We get together twice a week for breakfast, and I like to say we have fun, food, and fellowship.
And this is an opportunity to do that with everybody.
It is. And we just may have a really big group of Band of Brothers and Sisters on Friday.
And this is happening at the church?
It's happening at the dock.
At the dock.
And that's the contemporary building behind the main church.
Okay.
And the address is 800 South Main Street.
Okay. And again, you can get tickets at the door.
Yes.
Okay. You've got a speaker, guest speaker.
Yeah. Sure. We're going to have Jim Steffen with us. He's a renowned motivational speaker. He's been around for quite a while, owner and operator of Jim's Gym, but you've probably seen him on things like Jay Leno and ESPN and American Ninja Warrior a couple times. And just a really awesome guy, and has a great faith story. And so he's going to kind of share a little bit about his faith journey, and also just his speech that he gives. And we're really looking forward to having him.
And the name of his presentation is Fit for God.
Yeah,
which is perfect.
And if he can't motivate you,
I know,
to get
who
going
can?
On Easter weekend, what
who can? Know,
exactly?
Then you're,
I know. Exactly.
You're beyond hell.
I know.
We mentioned Holy Week. Obviously, this is the most significant week on the Christian calendar. And I know it seems like each year, I don't want to say there's like a theme for Holy Week, but I guess for lack of a better term, you look at a different aspect to highlight of one's Christian faith.
Sure.
What are you looking at this
year? Well, something that we've been doing throughout the whole season of Lent is really we've taken Holy Week, and we've taken one day, and we've talked about it for a whole week. So we actually started Palm Sunday way back right after Ash Wednesday, and we've walked through it week by week, and just kind of going a day at a time, because sometimes I think we miss these days that are in the middle of Holy Week, where, we'll a lot of times have services and stuff like that, and we have some people show up, but usually people will come to Palm Sunday, and then they show up next Sunday, and Jesus is risen, and like, what happened in between?
Yeah,
and
a lot goes on.
Yeah, so it's the week that changed the world, and so we talk about it. We've been talking about it all Lenten season, and so then this week we're going to just kind of walk through those, and we do all these different things. We'll have a very traditional service for Maundy Thursday or Holy Thursday, and communion and all of those things. And then Good Friday, we do a couple of things. We've got the breakfast in the morning, but then we're going to have worship and prayer service in the evening. That's more contemporary with the youth group and the praise band. Mm-hmm. And we kind of try to hit all different aspects of it.
And relating that to people's modern existence and, daily lives in the 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're so busy, know, and we just kind of skip by these things sometimes. Mm-hmm. We actually talked about yesterday at church about Holy Saturday, which is a day that we tend to just, nobody does anything for Holy Saturday. Right. It's the day where Jesus is in the tomb and everything is terrible. And I think sometimes people's lives feel that way, where, man, just everything is a mess and everything's hard and it's hard to imagine Sunday is coming. But that's the hope that we have in the resurrection.
I had a good friend that listened to Dan's sermon, that doesn't go to St. Mark's, that listened to Dan's sermon, and it just ministered her to her, where she was at in her life. Mm-hmm. And just, you don't think about Holy Saturday a lot, right, but addressing that really meant a lot to her.
Yeah, and that is important because so many people these days have this, I don't want to say crisis of faith, but are questioning how does the church fit into, you know, our modern lives today. And you see it in terms of attendance. You see it in terms of young people who are, in some cases, turning away from the church. And
yeah, and so that's a part of why we like to offer a lot of different ways, kind of avenues in, on ramps in. People are going to come, you know, for different reasons, and everybody's at a different place in their life. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I really appreciate about our church is that we try to meet people where they are in all different walks of life. One, for instance, is that this is going to the $10 at the door. This everything this Good Friday for the breakfast is going to benefit Night to Shine, which is something we've done now for the last couple of years. It's a prom night for people with special needs, all over the community and surrounding communities. And so we know that there are people who, you know, are just going through really hard things, and we want to be able to celebrate them and share God's love with them. And so I love that we can kind of, in everybody's daily lives, we're trying to find ways to say, hey, the church sees you where you are. Mm-hmm. We see you. We love you. And we just want to celebrate you.
I know you just had the Night to Shine.
Yeah, we did. The second
recently.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome
because you got to see these special needs folks celebrated as they walk the red carpet, and everybody's cheering and clapping, and the looks on their faces.
Really over the top.
It's amazing, just the joy and the happiness. And then when they're crowned king and queen, it's just like, it's your heart just goes, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's great. We see people come in and they get their shoes shined. The whole thing.
limousine rides.
Limo rides. And the whole community comes out for it. When we have, for every special guest we have come, honored guest we have come for it, we have two volunteers that are doing something to serve them. So it takes the whole community to come together. And it's not just our church, but it's people from around the community that come in and participate.
Such a cool program. So again, the Good Friday breakfast obviously is Friday.
Correct.
And
doors open at 7:30. The breakfast starts at 8 a.m.
Again, in our conversation earlier this week with Bruce Beck, St. Mark's Band of Brothers and Sisters group, Pastor Dan Metzger, St. Mark's United Methodist Church. Their annual Good Friday Community Breakfast is happening tomorrow morning. We've got a link for more information at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. Well, my voice held out today. We'll see if we can make it through tomorrow and finish up the week. Until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll hopefully get you back here tomorrow.